Chapter 6. My cat walked on my face just after dawn. My body thought I should have been getting a couple more hours of shut-eye, at the least. Instead, I shambled to the door to let Mister outside. Before the cat left, he bobbed his head at me, and his eyes glittered with nearly invisible flickers of orange light. Bob had taken temporary possession of Mister's body. Actually, I suspected that Mister tolerated Bob's control only because he got to go see new things when I sent Bob out on a mission. Bob was a being of spirit and was too fragile to go drifting around in sunlight. It could burn his usual form to vapor in a few seconds. The spirit needed some form of protection during full daylight, and Mister was it. I had my usual flash of concern and mumbled, "Be careful with my cat." The cat rolled his eyes and gave me a contemptuous-sounding feline meow. Then Mister hurled himself against my legs in a gesture that had nothing to do with Bob, before bounding up the steps and out of sight. I showered, got dressed, and got enough of a fire going in my kitchen stove to scramble some eggs and toast some bread. There was a scratching sound from the open trapdoor to my lab. Then I heard a series of thumps. A moment later, the scratching came again, and I peered down the stepladder. The little gray puppy had escaped the box and was attempting to climb the stepladder. He made it up 5 or 6 steps, slipped, and thumped back down to the stone floor at the bottom of the ladder, evidently for at least the second time. He didn't whimper when he fell. He just sprawled, wiggled to get his paws back under him, then started up the stepladder again, full of, well, dogged determination. "Hell's bells, dog. You're insane. Did you know that? Certifiable." The puppy climbed to the next step and paused to look at me, mouth dropping open in a doggy grin. He wagged his tail so hard he nearly fell off again. I went down and scooped him up, put him on the love seat, and sat down with him to eat breakfast. I shared and made sure he got a bit of water to drink. Just because I wasn't keeping him didn't excuse me from showing a guest some measure of hospitality, even if the guest was fuzzy. While I ate, I mapped out my plan for the day. I'd have to spend most of the day at Genosa's studio if I was going to be able to protect anyone from incoming curses. But ultimately, that was a losing strategy. Sooner or later, I would be in the wrong place, or else the curse might come in too hard or fast for me to stop. The smart plan was to find out where these curses were coming from. Someone had to be sending them. What I really had to do was find that person and push their face in a little. Problem solved. What's more, I was pretty confident that whoever was behind these curses was close to Genosa's social circle. While not as invasive or vicious as magic that directly attacked a person's physical body, this curse was still plenty potent. For magic to work, you have to believe in it. Really believe. Without any doubts or reservations. It isn't all that common for someone to have that much conviction directed toward murderous ends. It's even less common to have that kind of rancor for a complete stranger. All of which meant that the killer was probably someone close to Genosa's crowd. Or in it. Which meant that there was at least a chance that I would come face to face with the killer at work today. Best pack for trouble. Speaking of which, I wouldn't have to worry much about the Black Court making a move on me in daylight. But it didn't mean I could afford to let my guard down for long. Vampires had a general habit of recruiting surrogate thugs for wet work in broad daylight, and a bullet between the eyes would kill me just as well as some vampire ripping my lower jaw off. In fact, it would be a lot better, because then the vamp could order the flunky to give himself up or suicide, and the mortal authorities, who might otherwise cause trouble, would become a non-issue. I was better than most at maintaining a high alert, but even so, I couldn't be sharp on my guard forever. I'd get tired, bored, make mistakes. To say nothing of how grumpy it would make me, generally speaking. The longer I waited to solve the vampire problem, the more likely I'd be to get dead. So I had to move fast. Which meant that I'd need to round up some help fast. It took me about 10 seconds to figure out who I wanted to call. I even had time enough to go see one of them before work. We finished breakfast, and I let the puppy handle the pre-wash. I got out my Rolodex, got on the phone, and left two messages with two answering machines. Then I pulled on my heavy black mantled duster, dropped the pup into one of its huge pockets, fetched my staff and rod along with a backpack full of various gadgets for on-the-fly spell work, and went out to face the day. My first destination, Dojo's Hurricane Gym, resided on the first floor of an old office building not far from the headquarters of Chicago PD. The place had once been a tragically, if predictably, short-lived country and western bar. When Joe moved in, he tore down every wall that wasn't a load-bearing section, ripped out the cheap ceiling tiles, peeled the floor down to smooth, naked concrete, and installed a lot of lights. To my right lay a couple of bathrooms large enough to do double duty as locker rooms. A large square of safety carpet boasted about 30 well-used pieces of weight training equipment and several racks of weights and dumbbells that made my muscles ache just looking at them. In front of me was an honest-to-goodness boxing ring, though it wasn't raised. On the other side of the ring, a raised platform boasted a long row of boxing targets, heavy bags, speed bags, and a couple of flicker bags that I could rarely hit more than once in a row. The last area was covered with a thick impact mat and was the largest in the gym. Several people in judo pajamas were already working through various grappling techniques. I recognized most of the pajama people on site as members of Chicago's finest. One of the men, a large and brawny rookie, let out a sharp shout, and then he and another man closed in to attack a single opponent. They were quick and worked well together. If it had been anyone but Murphy up against them, they probably would have been successful. Lieutenant Karen Murphy, the woman in charge of the Special Investigations Division of Chicago PD, stood an even 5 feet. Her blonde hair had been tied back into a tail, and she wore white pajamas with a faded belt that was more gray than black. She was attractive in a pleasantly wholesome kind of way, crystal blue eyes, clear skin, an upturned nose. And she'd been a student of Aikido since she was 11. The brawny rookie underestimated her speed, and she had slipped aside from his kick before he realized his mistake. She caught him by an ankle, twisted with her whole frame, and sent him stumbling away for a second or two, time enough for her to handle the second attacker. He struck more cautiously, and Murphy let out an abrupt shout of her own, faked a jab, and drove a front kick into his belt. It wasn't at full strength, and he'd taken the blow correctly, but he fell back a couple of steps, hands lifted in acknowledgement. If Murphy had been in earnest, she'd have put him down, hard. The rookie came back in, but he hadn't really gotten up to speed. Murphy blocked a jab and a slow reverse punch, got the rookie by the wrist and sent him smashing down on the impact mat, one hand twisted to the breaking point and held firm at the small of his back. The rookie grimaced and slapped the mat 3 times. Murphy released him. "Hey, Stallings," she said, loudly enough to be heard by the whole gym. "What just happened here?" The older opponent grinned and said, "O'Toole just got beat up by a girl, Lieutenant." There was a general round of applause and good-natured jeers from the other cops in the gym, including several calls of "Pay up!" and "Told you so!" O'Toole shook his head ruefully. "What did I do wrong?" "Telegraph the kick," Murphy said. "You're a moose, O'Toole. Even a light kick from you will do the job. Don't sacrifice speed to get more power. Keep it quick and simple." O'Toole nodded and walked over to an open corner of the mat with his partner. "Hey, Murphy," I called. "When are you going to stop picking on little kids and fight someone your own size?" Murphy flicked her tail over her shoulder, her eyes shining. "Come say that to my face, Dresden." "Give me a minute to amputate my legs and I will," I responded. I took my shoes off and set them against the wall along with my duster. Murphy got a smooth wooden staff about 5 feet long from a rack on the wall. I took my staff into a square marked in tape on the mat, and we bowed to each other. We warmed up with a simple sequence, alternating strikes in a steady, working rhythm, wooden staves clacking solidly. Murphy didn't start pushing for more speed. "Haven't seen you in almost 2 weeks. You flaking out on this self-defense notion?" "No," I said, keeping my voice down. "Been on a job. finished it up last night. I lost focus, slipped up in the sequence, and Murphy's staff banged down hard on the fingers of my left hand.
Hell's bells, ow!
Concentrate, wimp. Murphy gave me a second to shake my fingers, and then she started again from the beginning. You've got something on your mind.
Something off the record, I said, lowering my voice.
She looked around. No one was close enough to listen in.
Okay.
I need a thug. You available?
Murphy arched a brow.
You need manpower?
Thug power, I said.
Murphy frowned.
What do you have in mind?
Black Court, I said. At least two in town, probably more.
Hitters?
I nodded.
One of them came pretty close to taking me last night.
You okay?
Yeah, but we have to shut these guys down and fast. They aren't gentle and fun-loving like the Reds.
Meaning?
Meaning that when they feed, their victims don't usually survive. They don't feed as often, but the longer they stay, the more people are going to get killed.
Murphy's eyes glittered with a sudden angry fire.
What's the plan?
Find them. Kill them.
Her brows shot up.
Just like that? No formal balls? No masquerades? No clandestine meetings as preliminaries?
Nah. I thought it might be nice to get the drop on the bad guys for a change.
I like that plan.
It's simple, I agreed.
Like you,
Murphy said.
Just like me.
When?
I shook my head. As soon as I can find out where they're holed up during daylight, I can probably do it in a day or three.
How's Saturday?
Why? She rolled her eyes.
Murphy annual family reunion is this weekend. I try to be working on reunion weekend.
Oh, I said. Why don't you just, you know, not show up?
I need a good excuse not to show up, or my mother won't let me hear the end of it.
So lie.
Murphy shook her head.
She'd know. She's psychic or something.
I felt my eyebrows go up.
Well, gee, Murph. I guess I'll just try to arrange things so that the deadly monster threat will be convenient to ducking your annual family fun fest.
Your sense of priorities once more astounds me.
She grimaced. Sorry. I spend time dreading this every year. Things are sort of hard between me and my mother. Family skews your sanity. I don't expect you to under...
She broke off abruptly, and a little pang of hurt went through me. She didn't expect me to understand. I didn't have a mother. I didn't have a family. I never had. Even my dim memories of my father had all but vanished. I'd been only 6 years old when he died.
God, Harry, Murph said. I wasn't thinking. I'm sorry.
I coughed and focused on the sequence. It shouldn't be a long job. I find the vamps, we go in, pound in some stakes, cut some heads, toss some holy water, and we're gone. She began to speed the pace, evidently as glad as I to leave that comment unremarked. The strength of her swings made my hands buzz when her staff hit mine.
You mean we get to live the cliché? She asked. Steaks and crosses and garlic?
Yeah, cakewalk. Murphy snorted.
Then why do you need thugs?
In case they have goons. I need thug power with counter-goon capability.
Murphy nodded. A few extra hands wouldn't be a bad idea.
She sped up again, her staff a blur. I had to struggle to keep up.
Why don't you ask the holy knight guy?
No, I said.
What if we need him?
Michael would come in a hot second if I asked him, but I'm tired of seeing him get hurt because of me. I frowned, almost lost the rhythm, then found it again. God or someone like him does Michael's event scheduling, and I get the feeling that Michael's a lot less invincible when he isn't officially on the clock.
But he's a big boy. I mean, he knows the risks. He has brains.
He also has kids. Murphy faltered this time, and I hit one of her thumbs. She winced and nodded toward the rookie cop she'd humbled.
O'Toole there is Mickey Malone's nephew. He'd jump through fire for you if I asked him along.
God, no. No newbies on this run. A stupid mistake could be fatal.
I could talk to Stallings.
I shook my head. Murph, the boys in SI are a lot better at handling supernatural weirdness than the average bear. But a lot of them still don't really believe what they're dealing with. I want someone smart and tough,
and who won't freeze or freak out, and that's you. They're better than that. What happens to them if something goes wrong? If I make a mistake, or you do? Even if they got out in one piece, how do you think they would handle the backlash when they got back to the real world, where people don't believe in vampires, and there are bodies to explain? Murphy frowned. The same thing that would happen to me, I guess. Yeah, but you're their leader. You want to be responsible for sending them into that kind of mess? Expose them to that? Murphy looked at several of the men around the gym and grimaced. You know I don't want that, but my point is that I'm as vulnerable as they are. Maybe, but you know the score. They don't. Not really. You know enough to be careful and smart. What about the White Council? Murphy asked. Shouldn't they be willing to help you? I mean, you're one of their own. I shrugged. By and large, they don't like me. I need their help like I need a sword in the neck. Gee, someone actually resisted your charm and finesse. What can I say? They have no taste. Murphy nodded. So, who else are you going to get? You and one more will do for Coffin Patrol, I said. I know a guy who is good with vampires, and I'm going to have a driver standing by when it goes down. How many laws are you planning on breaking? None, I said, if I can help it. What if these vampires have human goons? We disable them. I'm only gunning for Black Court. But if you want to pull double duty as conscience officer, that's fine by me. We finished the sequence, backed a step away, and bowed to each other. Murphy walked with me to the edge of the mat, frowning and mulling things over. I don't want to sidestep any laws. Vampire hunting is one thing. Going vigilante is another. Done, I said. She frowned. And I'd really, really like it if we did it on Saturday. I snorted. If we go early, maybe you can get laid up in the hospital or something, at least. Ha, ha, Murphy said. Do me a favor and keep an eye on missing persons for a few days. It might help tip us off to their location. I want every bit of information I can get. Gotcha, Murphy said. You want to work on some hand-to-hand? I picked up my duster. Can't. Gotta be on the new job in half an hour. Harry, Aikido is a demanding discipline. If you don't practice every day, you're going to lose what you've learned. I know, but it isn't like I can depend on a routine from day to day. A little knowledge is a dangerous thing, Murphy said. She held my staff for me while I put on my coat and abruptly frowned as she handed it back. What? I asked her. Her mouth twisted into the shape it got when she tried to hold back laughter. Is that a puppy in your pocket or are you just glad to see me? I looked down. The puppy had woken from his nap and poked its head out of my duster's pocket and was panting happily. Oh, right. Murphy plucked the puppy out of my pocket, turned him belly up, and started rubbing his tummy. What's his name? No name. I'm not keeping him. Ah, Murphy said. Want a dog? She shook her head. They take too much attention, and I'm gone at all hours. Tell me about it. Know anyone who does? Not really. Do me a favor. Keep him for a day. Murphy blinked. Why me? Because I have to go on a new job this morning, and I haven't had time to get him settled with someone. Come on, Murph. He's friendly. He's quiet. You'll never know he's there. Just for the day. Murphy glowered at me. I'm not keeping him. I know. I know. I'm not keeping him. You just said that, Murph. Just so long as you understand that I'm not keeping him. I get it already. She nodded. Just this once, then. I'm doing paperwork at my desk today, but you'd better be there to pick him up by 5. You're an angel, Murph. Thank you. She rolled her eyes and settled the pup in the curl of her arm. Yeah, yeah. What's the new job? I sighed and told her. Murphy burst out laughing. You're a pig, Dresden. I didn't know, I protested. Oink, oink, oink. I glowered at her. Don't you have some paperwork to do? Get there by 5, pig. By 5, I sighed. I grumbled to myself as I walked out to my car
and left for my first day on the set.